Night of the Living Dreads podcast, episode 24. This week, Malice and myself are talking a little BTK. We also have a few birthday wishes as well as
this week's SMF.
That's right. All right, here we go. Night of the Living Dreads podcast. Again, episode 24. I'm Otis B. Dreads.
I'm Malice Murphy.
And, you know, this is kind of a little bit of a celebratory show in a sense because a few birthdays that we have to mention at some point. Before we do, though, it's our time to pass out some gory love. Of course, Gore Hounds of Horror over there on Facebook. Visit us. You won't be disappointed. After Dark, which is a another horror related group on Facebook, and of course Night of the Living Dreads. We're over there, Malice, and you know I just got an invite to a new horror group. I'm not sure who started this. If this is kind of a side thing from Gorehounds, I've not dug into that yet, but. It's called Misfit Horror Fiend Club. If you like horror and you like the Misfits, this is welcome home. Malice and myself are both over there on all of these groups, so you can visit us on any one. Now, I mentioned a couple birthdays, and before we get into the meat and potatoes of this week's podcast... a couple birthdays. Yesterday was Gorehounds of Horror's first birthday. 1 year anniversary for Gorehounds, the best damn horror group on Facebook. Just under the 10,000 member mark in 1 year. Pretty fucking amazing, wouldn't you say, Malice?
Yeah. Happy birthday, Gorehounds.
That's right, man. And, I mean, in order to, I think, gain a membership of that level in such a little bit of time, it's hard to get people to, come in and like your page and be active and blah, blah, blah. And, to the point where you have, 10,000, it's hard to get 100 people. I mean to like your page, to be a member of your group, and 10,000 in a year. That's awesome. But here's the funny thing that you actually just brought up right before recording. One of our main topic, I guess, because we kind of almost have two main topics, because we could really do a show on this week's SMF, an entire show on this week's SMF, as well as could do an entire show on what we're kind of considering our main topic, and it's because the birthdays are similar. Gorehounds of Horror's birthday, March 9th. Who else, Malice, was born on March 9th?
That would be Dennis Rader.
Otherwise known as?
BTK.
That's right. BTK, Dennis Rader, and Gorehounds of Horror share the same fucking birthday.
Yeah, I think he turned 74.
74 today. Well,
Yesterday.
Yeah, he's got quite a few years on Gorehounds, but who knows? We could be around 74. I may not be. I'm pretty fucking sure I'm not going to be. But, I thought that was right. It didn't even really occur to me. I knew in my head that, Dennis Rader was, his birthday was March 9th, and I obviously knew that Gorehounds' 1 year anniversary was yesterday, March 9th. I just, for some reason, could not put the fucking two together. I don't know what it is, man. I just could not put it. And you put it together for me. You finished the puzzle. All right. You've been suffering from a little bit of a cold, my friend.
Yeah, man. It's been fucking kicking my ass for 2 weeks.
That's horrible. Yeah, I don't get sick very often, which is odd because I'm not the healthiest guy walking the face of the earth. when I do, I get that way. And so luckily it doesn't happen to me a whole lot. And it's hard because you got some little ones running around. Of course, you know, the old lady, you got a, you know, house full. When you got like 4, 5, 6 fucking people in a house and you get sick, it like circulates for months. Yeah. It's like it takes fucking forever to get rid of it. You know, I know, you know, Jody and myself, when we had all the kids, there was 4 kids and us 2. One of us gets sick. Oh, the whole house is sick for like 2, 3 months, it seemed like. Crazy.
Well, Aiden and his mom, they lucked out. You know, they were only sick for a few days.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. Yeah.
Bryson and myself, we've been sick for 2 weeks, man. It's like,
shake it. Well, you sound a little better. Yeah, well, I mean, you were. Well, pretty,
I feel a lot better too.
Yeah, you were pretty bad off last week. That's why Mrs. Dreds sat in. I think it was it last week.
Yeah, it was last.
I think it was last week. Yeah, and anyway. I think I know what time it is, my friend. It is time for this week's SMF.
Oh, you sick motherfucker!
All right, Malice, who is this week's SMF?
That would be Stacy Ruth Castor.
Ooh, also, another female.
Yeah. Also known as the Black Widow. She was given that name by the media.
Oh, interesting, but fitting.
Oh, definitely fitting.
The media will give you very sometimes funny names. with being called the Black Widow, I can only imagine that she has taken a few husbands out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Two husbands, actually. Okay. She met her first husband when she was 17 in 1985. Mm-hmm. And they... you know, hit it off pretty well.
Right.
They had a daughter and
was
married.
Ashley?
They had a daughter and was married by 1988.
Okay.
Then they had a second daughter, and her name was Bree, and she was born in 1991.
Hmm. So it seemed to be a pretty happy family then. There wasn't a whole lot of...
they seemed to be, you know, it was typical family. You know, she worked during the day. He worked nights as a mechanic. I think she worked as a dispatcher for, I think, 911.
Was it?
I believe so.
I do remember her being a...
For an ambulance?
Yeah, a dispatcher of some sort, yeah.
but it was in late 1999 that Wallace began to feel ill all the time.
All the time.
And, you know, he had family, friends trying to encourage him to seek medical care, but he had never went to the hospital.
And how was he feel? Was he, what, like throwing up? Was his diarrhea? Was it, you know, fatigue? Or, I mean, what are we talking about?
He was always coughing and feeling like he was swollen, like his body was swelling up.
Oh, interesting. This went on for about how long? A few months, you said, before?
Yeah, I mean, it went on for some time. It was for over a year before he actually ended up dying.
Wow.
And the, you know, the hospital, they ruled it as a heart attack.
Heart attack, yeah, yeah.
And his sister, you know, she wanted an autopsy done. And his wife, Stacy, she was like, no, you know, there's no autopsy needed.
Yeah, Mike Wallace is the deceased sister. Yeah, she wanted the autopsy because she didn't feel that maybe it was that.
Yeah, I mean, he was only 38 years old.
Right, which, there have been, you know, people, I've known people in my life who have, you know, young age, early 30s, you know, but they normally have a heart condition that complicates. But I guess, you know, a heart attack. But he wasn't like a, you know, a heavy drug user or you know, none of that. Things may complicate your heart and cause you to, you know, crawl into an early grave at a young age, you know, because you have a heart attack. You know, it wasn't nothing like that, right? This just seemed a little crazy for, you know, his sister to believe that, that this was a heart attack. And then you said Stacy, his old lady, she was like, no, I believe the doctors kind of thing.
Yeah.
Almost like she was, you know, knew that they would find something maybe that would implicate her.
Yeah, definitely. Like. She was definitely worried. Mm-hmm. So, 3 years later, within 3 years, she meets David Castor.
Mm-hmm.
And they get married in 2003. And he owns a air conditioning installation and repair company. And she worked as, you know, as an office manager for
clerical
for the business
type shit.
Yes,
yeah, yeah, right.
And within 2 years, you know, he ends up dead.
Interesting. And I'm seeing a pattern here, Mallet.
They at first they ruled this as a suicide because she had called. It was on August 2005, she called the police and was like, hey, you know, my husband and I, we've been arguing. He's locked himself in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. He's been in there all weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's not come out.
And was this was the call that she made, wasn't it, Monday morning or something?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
He called Monday morning, at, you know, after the weekend. He's been in there all weekend. He's not going to work. I'm beginning to worry about him. So they go to the house. They, you know, they go in because they don't get no answer, and they force their way into the bedroom, and he's in there laying on the bed naked.
Naked.
Blood all over the room, and there's an empty container of, you know, antifreeze and two glasses on the nightstand, yeah. One with liquor in it, one with antifreeze in it,
mm-hmm.
and a bottle of liquor.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the ocean spray.
The ocean spray. Oh, yeah, the cranberry juice.
The cranberry juice. I think there was an empty bottle of ocean spray cranberry juice there. Yeah, so a very, very sticky situation now. And they tried to say this was a suicide. He wasn't really that kind of person. And from some of the, you know, at least that's how Ashley and Bree, her daughters, perceived him. Because I think him and, you know... It was always said kind of that, you know, the two husbands here kind of treated one daughter a little different than the other.
Right.
And that would be they treated Bree a little better, it was said to be, than Ashley. And this caused Stacy to maybe overcompensate, you know, the affection for Ashley to make up for, you know, maybe Ashley feeling like she wasn't loved as much as Bree. And where I'm going with this, I don't know.
No, I mean, you're hitting the nail right on the head. But, I mean, those were the words of Stacy. She said that she befriended Ashley because, you know, she had blamed herself for her father's death.
Right.
Because she was there when it happened, you know, but she said, you know, she's 11, 12 years old.
Right.
She says she really didn't understand. She just thought he was sick. You know, she didn't understand that he was having a heart attack, and that's what, you know, everyone was led to believe.
And Ashley, you know, never thought that, you know, this was the way he would go out. You
right.
know, I suicide just didn't click, you know, with those other than Stacy, obviously.
With David, right.
You know. Oh, with David?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they said David committed suicide.
That's right. David. Mike was the heart attack. I'm doing air quotes.
But she was like 17 years old when Ashley would have been 17 when mm-hmm. David died.
Which would have been her stepdad, basically.
Correct.
Because her dad was Mike Wallace. Okay.
But, you know, all along, you know, there's detectives that, you know, weren't buying it.
Right.
So, you know, they had her phone tapped. They had cameras on the outside of the house. They had
surveillance on her.
They had cameras at the cemetery recording the grave sites because she had the husbands buried right next to each other.
Yeah, and one of his friends, I want to say David, maybe. He was the one that was said that, yeah, just on the spur of a moment, let's just go out and have a beer, blah, blah, blah. That kind of guy. Well, was that David or was that Mike?
I think it was Mike.
Mike, because, yeah, at one time he was a big partier and whatnot, and then he kind of straightened his act out and, yeah, you know, kind of sobered up and wasn't into the whole, you know, drinking like he was. But, yeah, one of his friends was like, man, look at this. You got two dead husbands buried right next to each other. Your fucking name is on both fucking tombstones. Okay, what are you, starting a collection here? I mean, what are you, some kind of morbid collector? It started to, you know, ring bells, and not only, you know, the detectives, like you were saying, but also the friends of, you know, the
friends
then
and
deceased.
Family, yeah, yeah, of course.
Sick.
So, you know, they, so what they do, they exhume the body of Mike. And they test it, you know, at first without letting anybody know. And then they went and picked up Stacy to interrogate her. Like, hey, we, you know, we found traces of antifreeze in Mike.
You know? I can't remember the exact chemical that they used in the hearing and whatnot. But,
right.
Yeah.
But where they had found the crystals in mm-hmm. his organs, and I mean, right, he'd been there for years.
Yeah, and they said he was well preserved when they dug him up. I don't think they expected him to be in the shape he was for them to be able to even do. You know, I think they probably figured they were going to have to dig pretty deep because this guy's been in the ground for a few years now.
Right,
and he's probably pretty much, there's probably not going to be a lot to, you know, use. That was not the case. He was actually, yeah, pretty well preserved. Like you said, that was the smoking gun right there, these crystals that they found, which was a direct link to poisoning from a chemical in antifreeze. So what happens then? She's got to be getting worried.
So, yeah, they question her. And
when did this happen again? This was, what, 2005? What that they no, 2003 that they exhumed the body. It was like 2005 that David met his death. That would be the second husband. But when did they dig the body up? Because that they were kind of, they had their eye on her, you know, a little bit.
It was sometime before September 2007.
Okay, so yeah, all right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep. Because, you know, oddly enough, you know, that's two dead husbands on your hands. But that's when things get, this is, you know, we ain't even done yet. I mean, I mean, with the deaths, you know, I mean, it gets crazy to a point that really is what made this woman a candidate for SMF. But I don't know if we're there yet. I know he...
So
Dallas has got himself a new little laptop here. He's doing all kinds of research over here.
So back to them recording her. They're recording these grave sites, and she never once, from the time they started recording, ever go visit them. Ever once. But, you know, she loved both her husbands, right, you know, more than anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So
with no signs of a grieving widow and
correct,
and paying respects. Yeah. Red flag.
So, you know, they go and, you know, they question the daughter, and, you know, she calls her mom, and she, you know, she's upset, and, you know, Stacy's like, you know, we'll just come home. You know, we've been dealing with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's, you know, have a drink.
And have a drink with me, and let's just kind of, you know,
unwind,
maybe cry a little if that's what it comes to, and just be together. We're friends. I've always been there for you. Stacy's thinking, you know, with the mean dad and the mean stepdad. You know, I'm here for you. Yeah, I get it. Okay.
So, you know, and this is, you know.
And we figured out Stacy was about 17 at this point, 17, 18 maybe?
No, she would have been like 19.
19, yeah, right. She was born in 88, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so about 19 years old, you know, having a drink with mom, unwinding, a lot of shit going on.
Right. And, you know, that's all it was. Right. You know, so she gets up, she goes to school, comes home the next day, and her mom's like, you know, let's drink again.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe,
you know,
building that trust up kind of thing, if there was any mistrust, you know.
Well, it was this time, you know, that the drinks that she gives her, you know, the very first drink she gives her, she goes, well, this is nasty. She goes, well, I probably just put a little bit too much vodka in it. Just drink it.
You know? Yeah, I think they said it was vodka and Sprite. Stacy was a vodka drinker.
And, you know, but what it was, you know, and had a bunch of crushed up pills in it. And so she drinks the drink. You know, she trusts her mom. She just, you know, believes that it might have too much vodka in it. Mm. You know, she's just going to, you know, suck the first one down.
Right.
Then she's, you know, waking up in the hospital.
Yeah.
And during this time that she's passed out, her mom had already written a suicide confession letter.
Now, she typed it up on a computer because none of the, you know, the letter was not handwritten, so they couldn't do like any kind of handwriting analysis or anything. They typed it up and did it that way. That way, well, I guess, you know, she didn't realize, but, you know, she probably thought, nobody's going to be able to catch me if I type this up because they won't be able to tell it was me and blah, blah, blah. Well, bullshit.
I'm no expert, but I feel like if I'm going to write a suicide letter, I'm more than likely going to write it out
because by hand.
It seems like that would be more of, you know, the tools
right.
The tools to do that would be more accessible. Not everybody's, you know, you're just going to have a computer. Let me go type this up.
Right. Yeah. It seemed very, very strange. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, there for a moment, you know, I kind of, you know, believed it for a moment, you know. It is possible. Yeah. It is possible that, you know, she could have hated her father and then hated her stepfather even more. Mm-hmm. But watching the trial, you know, watching the footage that we watched together, man, like, and Stacy has no emotions
at all
whatsoever. She's not upset that, you know, she says her daughter's a murderer. She's not upset that her daughter is saying she's a murderer. She's not upset that, you know, her family's going through this.
Right, right.
It's like...
It almost, Malice to me, it almost seemed like she had that composure, just the way she was sitting in the chair. And as always, I will drop the links down for, you know, the trial, the cross-examination, And so you guys can watch this yourself, because I don't know how well of a picture I'm going to be able to paint here. But, you know, she had that, her posture sitting up there on the stand and the way she reacted, her facial expressions, as you said, dead on. Yes, no emotion. She almost seemed to me like, oh, you fuckers are wasting my time. You know, just like she was bored, like, God. You know, why am I here? You know, I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. And I just like you, I thought, well, maybe the daughter could have done it. I can understand. There's plausibility to say, yes, given the home life and whatnot, you know.
But I feel like the mom would have been begging for her fucking life.
Exactly.
Like, please do not pen this on me. I did not do it. Mm-hmm. Like, she just, no. No, I did not say that.
Right.
I don't remember.
I do not know.
I make lots of phone calls and had lots of conversations in my life. I don't remember everything I said.
She is such a...
A fucking cunt.
Oh, man, she is so hateful.
I can't believe her.
Yeah, and, you know, you saw the exact opposite reaction because her daughter was up on the stand. And her daughter, the entire time, I think she was on the fucking stand pretty much. At least 80, 90% of the time she was on the stand. Eyes were filled with tears.
She's
been crying because she is going through this, and her family and her sister is going through this. And, you know, they're pretty much all alone. Dads aren't in the picture. Mom's on trial. But yet, I'm being fucking blamed for this. And she has emotion. She is somebody that you could probably believe. Now, I know a lot of psychopaths, sociopaths, you know, probably have the ability to take and turn the tears on and, you know, really put on a show. I get that.
Right.
This was genuine from what I saw.
Well, definitely.
Well, Ashley. But I did entertain. I even entertained the fact that were Stacy and Ashley working together? They seemed to be the closest in the family. There was some maybe favoritism going on there. So, you know, what was this, you know, a working together kind of thing? That, again, was just a fleeting thought.
Right.
I don't think there's much to back that up. And, well, hey.
I definitely suggest, you know, watching the trial, man. It's,
yeah.
Not only is it, I mean, it can be comical, you know, mm-hmm. depending on your sense of humor.
Yeah. We laughed the whole
thing. You know, it was really interesting, man. Just, and it's, I don't know. I got emotional over it with, like, anger.
Mm-hmm.
Just yeah. sitting there watching that woman, like, watching I her. Just.
Oh, she's hard to watch. I'm telling you, if you have little tolerance for, you know, just flat out, just like, you just look at some people.
Her arrogance is.
Arrogance, that's the word I was looking for. It was like, she was very arrogant, you know, almost like, you're wasting my time.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of attitude, and just, you know, the way she held herself, it's just like, you just want to reach out and choke the shit out of her. That's when you wish you had BTK on speed dial. That's what she did to me. I hate to say right. that, you know, because yeah. I'm not of a serial killer type, you know, person, you know. I like my freedom, more air quotes. But, you know, I mean, but she got me that way with the anger watching this trial. But again, like you said, it's very interesting. She did get sentenced.
Yes.
And what was her sentence, my friend?
Well, it didn't last that long, but she got 51 years to life in prison.
Okay.
She got murder and attempted murder and forgery. Because she had forged the will of right. David Castor right. And yeah. screwed his, you know, his son
out of it.
And his previous wife out of things that they were pretty much entitled to, that because they were the ones that helped, you know, build that company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
They were a part of it. And
wasn't it David's father who started it? Because if I remember,
yeah, it was
correctly,
David's father
yeah,
who started.
His son said, "Look, man, you know, my grandfather built this company on his blood, sweat, and tears. You know, I mean, he worked his ass off to get this company to where it is, and then this bitch comes around, you know, murders my fucking dad, and then sells the fucking company. You know, heartbreaking." But yeah, but so, and the attempted murder was on
her daughter,
and then of course the forgery, and then the murder was David, or was it Mike?
No, she got she was charged for David
because Mike was out of the jurisdiction.
Yeah, it was in a different
area.
This was
in Syracuse. This was Onondaga County, which actually, when I lived in Syracuse, I lived in that county.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it was after all of this. She was already locked away. So. But what else do we have to add to this week's SMF?
Other than she was a sick motherfucker, man. That's about it.
All right. Yes, she was. Stacy Castor. And that's O.R. Castor. And again, we'll put the links in the description. And you can go and watch some of these trials, the cross-examination from the prosecution. You can watch the defense. I mean,
it was
all of
it's
it.
Funny.
It is extremely comical. I really, one of the things I'm going to bring up just to maybe...
Objection.
entice you guys a little bit more. Spinelli! You're going to hear that name come up. He was one of the detectives.
I can't believe I forgot about that.
Spinelli! Spinelli! Get in there! Get in there! But, yeah, you will notice when you watch, when you see the prosecution questioning Stacy on the stand during the cross-examination, you will hear numerous objections coming from the defense side. Only one out of, I'm going to say, probably close to 10 objections.
If not more.
If not, I wasn't counting. I know there was a lot.
There was a lot, yeah.
And only one was sustained. And it actually came out of the judge's mouth. And when you hear it, you'll know. He came out and he said, I'm going to sustain that. It was almost like it was getting too obvious that everything was being overruled. And the witness, whoever, had to answer the fucking questions. And then, hey, as soon as the defense gets up there and there's an objection, sustained. It's like, good Lord, who's filling your pockets there, Judge?
Yeah.
Not that she got any kind of mistrial, because you know this was a you know a heinous cunt, as you mentioned. She is. I mean, yeah, to take and frame, try to kill your daughter, frame it as a fucking suicide to cover, and then in the suicide note, put in there how your daughter kills, you know, her dad at 11 and her stepdad at roughly 16, 17. You know, just to get you off the hook. I mean, your own flesh and blood. You know, there's probably, you know, a few parents out there that listen to us. We're both parents. It's unfathomable. I can't fathom it.
Well, I mean,
it's just unfathomable.
I mean, there was a couple times that, you know, I experienced with my dad and his drug, you know, fueled rage where
right.
he's pulled a knife on me. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I didn't act accordingly, I mean, he probably would have killed me. He probably right. would have, like, you know. Not even realizing what he was doing, sure. but
drugs were not the case with
Snips. Not known. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Right. I mean, hers was, you know, vindictive.
It was.
It was, you know, to save her own ass from going to jail for her own decisions.
And the reason, you know, that it seems the motive, the MO, in most of these murders, except of course for the attempted murder on her daughter, was money.
Yeah,
well, it was green. Financially backed, you know. I mean, that was her motivation, and she didn't really obtain a whole lot for what she had done. You know, the damage was a hell of a lot more than what she could ever obtain, in you know, in the way of finances. I mean, it's just horrible, you know. So, yeah, with that, this week's sick motherfucker, Stacy Castro. Do you got some kind of a hatred towards women? You're bringing up a lot of women and sick motherfuckers.
No, I just think that it should be
interesting though.
It should be equally distributed.
And you know, I mean, and we're trying with the SMF segment to you know bring up some people maybe you haven't heard of. You haven't heard of their story, and maybe intrigue you a little bit. And you know, hey, if you're into that kind of thing.
I just feel like the male might get more publicity, mm-hmm. like because really when it comes, the most famous female serial killer that I can think of it would be Eileen Wuornos, yeah, mm-hmm. and other than that, like
you don't. Hear
I got to do some right. research, right. you know. I got to
absolutely. You don't hear, and that's our objective is to you know bring about some names you may not be familiar with, maybe some names you are familiar with, and interesting cases.
There's at least one person out there that don't know Stacy Castor.
I was one of them. I was at least that guy, so there may be two, but. One guy you probably all know the name of is going to be our talk the second half of this week's podcast. That would be...
Blind, torture, and kill.
Otherwise known as BTK.
Dennis I said blind. Rader.
You said blind?
Yeah, I said blind. Bind, torture, kill.
That's funny. Yes, Dennis Rader, who, as we mentioned earlier, shares a birthday with Cordell Zavor. And, hey, we're going to listen to a song that you found during this break. We're big metal fans. And I actually, years ago, saw this band play. It was like, I don't know, maybe 1990, 91. Exodus, Suicidal Tendencies, and Pantera.
That was a badass concert, that I'm sure.
Yeah, it was Cowboys from Hell tour and whatnot. And Exodus.
You said in 91?
I'm guessing. I mean, it was early 90s.
I would have been 6 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I did my first crowd surfing. And I met Phil from Pantera. I got an autograph from him. Met Mike Muir from Suicidal. Didn't meet anybody from... this week's break music, that would be Exodus, and how fitting of a song. BTK is the name of this one. All right. I'm Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice Murphy.
And we're going to take a short little break. We're going to gather our senses. We're going to take some vitamins. And we're going to break our Bibles out. And we're going to have a little group prayer. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's the wrong podcast. No, we're... hey, we'll be back right after this. Enjoy some Exodus. right, get you some of that. Some Exodus, man. You picked that tune, Malice.
It's a long one.
It is kind of long, but I was like, hey, man. You know, it really works out. The name of the song, BTK, our topic this second half of the podcast, BTK, seemed fucking fitting to me. This is the Night Living Dreads podcast. I am Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice Murphy.
And, yeah, BTK being the, you know, topic. Before we get into that, though, we did, you know, hey, when we take breaks, you know, it was a long break, and... as it was mentioned in Dazed and Confused, we had a, it was, well, not so much a liquid lunch as it was a smoked lunch. So, yes, and with that in mind, we are very much advocates of the, you know, marijuana movement and whatnot, and, you know, very much friends with the plant. I forgot, and I really apologize, man. Because I forgot to always include another really cool-ass fucking group out there. And that would be Cannabis Arcade. Now, Cannabis is spelled with a K. Arcade spelled just how it's, you know, normally spelled. This is the best damn stoner group on Facebook. This is a funny fucking group. If you know, if you're just kicking back, you're not doing anything, you're lighting up a big fatty or whatever, and you want to laugh and, you know, peruse the Facebook community, check them out. Get over there, become a member. Because I'm telling you, man, there's some funny shit that goes on over there. Man.
Yes, there is.
It's a lot. And again, another group, as all the other ones we, you know, mentioned, Gorehounds, Misfit Horror Fiend Club, After Dark, of course, Night of Living Dreads. We're all over there. Malice and myself are over there on all of these. So, all right. With that out of the way, BTK, as you mentioned during the break, you read it a little wrong, and I kind of did too, so I got to make sure I don't do this. BTK, for those who don't know, because this is one of your more, you know, well-known serial killers.
Right.
Not so much like our SMF, but BTK stands for Bind, Torture, and Kill. And... this guy, his birthday was yesterday. You said he turned 74 earlier in the show, I think.
Is yes.
You said 74, BTK, otherwise known as, you know, Dennis Rader. He turned 74 yesterday on Gorehound Samore's birthday. Yeah, he was born in 1945. He was, you know, accused and convicted of killing 10 people. In the Wichita, Kansas area between, I think it was 74 and 91.
Right.
I'm just giving a brief overhaul right now because we're going to get into, you know, some of his victims. Anything that you want to bring up there, Malice, before maybe we get into his victims? Because this was one of those double life kind of guys. I mean, this was a guy who could, you know, I mean, Jekyll and Hyde. He was the, you know, what were some of the things that he did in the community? Let's start out like that because, I mean, that's what makes, you know, I think serial killers to me intriguing is that some of these guys are very much involved in the community. I mean, doing things where parents are trusting their children with them. Which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
You know, and you never know if that, you know, if you're handing your child off to one of those people. What were some of the things he was involved in?
He was a Cub Scout leader.
Wow. Getting right into that kid thing, huh?
Right,
Cub Scout leader.
He worked for security alarms, like ADT.
Right, right.
That's the guy you want to... knowing the pen.
And yeah, and exactly. And, you know, he got that job at the time where there were already some murders in the books. And he was installing alarm systems, they say, for people who were scared of the BTK killer. And here the BTK killer is installing your alarm system.
Exactly.
Talk about bad fucking luck. What else did he do, man?
He worked for the census what I'm assuming the Census Bureau.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much in that area, right, right.
And towards right when he was arrested, he was a dog catcher and a compliance officer.
Keep making sure, you know, going around with a roller, making sure your grass isn't, you know, over 7 inches or some bullshit, you know. And, you know, while he was, you know, had assumed that job and during his tenure there, he did some pretty horrible things, which we will get into. So, again, this guy was kind of revered. Well, he was also involved in his local church.
Yes, he was a...
He was the president.
The president, church, yeah. Yeah, the church council.
Church council, yeah. So, of course, you know, probably highly revered by the congregation.
Oh, extremely, yeah.
Yeah, and very well trusted. Nobody would have ever thought. I'm sure jaws were hitting the ground, you know, exponential, you know, proportions during Ooh. That time in Wichita.
Well, I'm saying, well, the most... fucking surprised one when it had to been his wife.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, right in her face, you know.
She, no idea.
She's sleeping with him every night.
Right.
Sharing a bed with him.
Absolutely crazy, man. Absolutely crazy. And if you are not familiar or have dove into Dennis Rader, otherwise known as BTK, that we highly suggest here in the Insane Asylum that you go and look at his confession tape. There's a video out there that you can watch right on YouTube, BTK Confession. Type that in, pretty simple. Not too big of words. And just watch it. It is absolutely amazing to me because he... I don't want to say callous, you know, but he just seems very not, you know, just right to the fucking point. We're also going to have that link down there in the description over there at 911dreads.com. And again, Dreads with no A. So, should we get into some of his... murders? Now, he was kind of one of these sexual fantasy kind of guys where he got off by killing people.
Yes.
That was his, you know, his release. So and it goes along, if you watch the confession video, it goes right along with how, you know, we're doing this, because he goes chronological. The judge, who is apparently the dumbest judge on the face of the planet.
Yeah, he was pretty ignorant.
He just could not understand anything Dennis was saying. It's humorous. And, yeah, we were talking about this during the break, just, you know, little off here. But how we can sit here and watch, you know, a serial killer confess to doing all these things. Okay, horrible, horrible things. And... What are we doing?
We're sitting here laughing
and cracking. It was like, you know, Mystery Science Theater serial killer episode or something. Because we're like cracking at the, you know, the judge. And I mean, it's humorous, but that's maybe a little, you know, too much, you know, insight into our twisted fucking minds. But anyway, let's start off the Otero family. It was Joseph. He was the father, 38. Julie was obviously his wife. She was 33. Joseph Otero Jr., he was 9 years old. And Josephine Otero. They didn't stray far from the J's now, did they? And she was 11. This particular incident happened on the 15th of January 1974. And what we're just going to, you know, bring up, I think, is what I'm going to bring up is pretty much everything that he kind of talked about in this confession. Which not all of it, because I can't remember all of it. But there were some problems in this one. He kind of broke in and he was a fugitive, and you know, he knew people were looking for him, and he would tell these people, you know, I'm running, I'm on the run, I'm hungry, I want food, I want your car, blah blah blah. But his method of kill was obviously strangulation.
Right.
That was just what he did. So it didn't turn out quite like he wanted to. I think Joseph kind of ripped the hole in the bag of, you know, because BTK put a bag over his head. He listened to the confession. He put a bag on his head, and I, you know, and a rope around it, and I strangled him, and I thought he was down.
They hear him, you know, describe it, man. It's like, yeah, he's giving you directions on how to make, you know, like some good scrambled eggs, you know. He's just sitting there just, yeah, and he goes, well, they weren't too happy about being tied up. And so I loosened their restraints and retied them. And, you know, they weren't very happy about me killing them. So I was just trying to
comfort them a little bit.
It's absurd.
It really is. It really is. We had all kinds of trouble, yeah. And then after, you know, he, you know, rectified the situation with Joseph, you know, getting his, you know, chewing through his bag or whatever. He put a shirt or a towel or some sort of, you know, cloth over his head, then the bag, so he couldn't so easily chew through. And I think that was what did him in? And
yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the final straw for Joseph. Unfortunately, yes, the whole family perished that way. I mean, all the way down to a 9-year-old little boy. It's just unbelievable. Joseph was killed by a plastic bag, and the 9-year-old boy was also... They found him with a bag over his head. The wife, the two females, interesting enough, okay, the two females, the two girls in the family, the wife and the daughter, were both killed by a rope.
Right.
Okay, and the two boys, which happened to be Senior and Junior, were both killed by plastic bags. I don't know if that was, you know, maybe he was OCD. I don't know. I just happened to notice that. All right. So, but Josephine, the daughter, 11 years old, was killed in a very different way. Not, you know, not the rope like, you know, you would think, like he's just, you know, choking her out, strangling her. He actually took her and hung her from a pipe in the basement. And then started to jerk off everywhere. I mean, I guess... why apologize now for harsh language? But I mean, that's basically what he did. He got sexually aroused, and just, you know, started doing the old knuckle shuffle on the piss pump.
I don't mean to laugh.
No, but... you do. Liar. We already told people we laughed at this shit. But yeah, that was
sick, good. Fucker, man.
It was. I mean, we could have, you know, did a double, you know, segment of sick motherfucker SMF this week, and we could have used both of these people, you know. But yeah, his birthday was yesterday. We're paying our respects. So yeah, he hangs Josephine, the 11-year-old daughter. Then I think he, you know, takes their car. He already had the keys. He takes their car and, you know, jets out of there. Next on the list, we have Catherine Bright. And this happened in April, just a few months later. April 4th, 1974. She was 21. And this was a little bit different, because he ended up stabbing this girl three times in the abdomen. And she died at Wesley Medical Center. I don't know a whole lot. Was it Catherine Bright that he told her, look, I have you know, sexual fantasies or desires or whatever it was, and I'm going to have to tie you up.
I believe it might have been.
What was that, her? Because there was one where, I mean, he just comes right out and tells him, look, you know, I have, you know, I'm going to have to tie you up now because I have, you know, sexual desires I got to, you know, amend to take care of. I'm not sure if it was this one or not, but there's a few more here. Shirley Vane, I think that is. She was 24. He took a little break. Here, just jump in if I'm going too fast.
Oh, no, I know right where you are.
All right. Shirley, yeah, he took a little bit of a break here. This happened in 1977, March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. And this happened again in Wichita, and of course, strangulation. He went back to, you know, his roots and did the whole rope thing. Nancy Fox, no relation to Mulder.
Mulder.
Fox Mulder. First name, last name. That was a joke going horribly wrong. All right, Nancy Fox, 25, December 8th, 1977. And he strangled her with a belt. Here's one that watching the interview with his daughter, who has come out and given some interviews there, you know, I guess the local area, and she mentions, you know, how, you know, she remembers Maureen Hedge, who was 53, and her she was put in a box April 27th, 1985. So again, there's a quite a bit of time going through there. I mean, you got, you know what, 12 years? No. What do you got there? About 18 years. 18 years. Almost two decades. Nothing. Nothing happens. And then Maureen Hedge, whom, again, like his daughter has mentioned, that, you know, this was just, you know, a friendly older woman, would always wave to him. You know, she would go over to their house, or, you know, her house. And she was strangled by what? Firing hands.
Did you say 18 years?
Was that wrong?
Yeah, it's eight.
It's 8 years. Oh, I'm so horrible at math. 8 years. All right. Thanks for that correction. Yeah, I suck at math. But, yeah, 8 years. Thank you, Malice.
You're welcome.
God, that was bad. I really fucked that up bad. Strangled with the hands. And the reason that, you know, I kind of laughed a little bit with the whole hands thing is because of the confession video. The judge asked, you know, did you strangled her with your hands? No, I used my fucking feet. What do you think?
Yeah, I just said my hands. He goes, and she died?
Right. He was like, well, yeah.
He goes, he was all remorseful, and he's like,
Yeah,
she did.
Mm-hmm. And you used your hands, Mr. Raider. It is. It's comical.
Dude, he gets mad at the judge. He goes, if you know anything about serial killers.
Right. He's all rubbing his brow. He's all sweating from the stupidity rolling off of the, you know, the black robe there. Yeah, it's like, yeah, he gets frustrated as hell at times, it seems like. He's like, all right, if you know anything or have read anything, if you even know how to spell serial killer... You should probably know. Do you understand who you're, you know, got in front of you? Of course I strangle with my fucking hands. I'd use my hands to put a bag over their head, too. And guess what? I had to tie a fucking noose around that bitch's fucking throat in the basement. I used my fucking hands. What the fuck else am I going to use? Did I just get a little mad at the judge right there? I think I did.
Maybe just a little.
All right, I'll simmer down. All right, so then we have Vicky Wedgery. No, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. She was 28, and this is simple math because it happened a year later in 86. September 16th, to be exact, she was strangled by a nylon stocking. And last but certainly not least, and the oldest on the list, Dolores E. Davis. That happened in 91. She was also, she was 62 and was strangled by pantyhose. Now, maybe it was Dolores who his daughter was very friendly with. I don't know. I just know it was an older lady. They all look the same. All right, so BTK, what, you know, again, he could have been a sick motherfucker this week, Malice.
Yeah. I mean, it goes from, and then he goes, didn't do anything, you know, from 1991.
Right.
And then in 2004,
yep,
you know, he started, you know, sending in all, having communications with the media, sending them all these packages with his victims', you know, possessions.
And it was right before then that he had a, it was like a decade long hiatus. I mean, he was just nowhere. There was no communication with police, media, nothing. There was no killings, no nothing. Then, like you said, in 2004, he springs up, he starts, because he was one of those guys that would send letters to the fucking police. And, you know, he was, you know, that was eventually his downfall. Because that time that you're speaking of in 2004, it kind of led to his arrest in 2005.
Yeah, it was only a year later.
Yeah, it didn't take long. And I think his demise was on a floppy disk. Was that what it was? And that, yes. And how they really, really, you know, were able to pinpoint this fucker.
Yeah. I watched a movie, is that The Hunt for BTK.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this a little bit.
That's pretty much, you know, verbatim, the cold case.
Seems pretty factual then from what you've looked into.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be some, you know, little minor
Hollywood's
differences.
Hollywood's always going to play a part for sure, yeah.
But, you know, they had where he was caught on surveillance camera at the Home Depot.
Yes.
With the cereal box and the pickup truck.
Yes.
But they couldn't identify him. They couldn't tell that it was him. There was no...
They were able to identify the type of vehicle,
right?
That, just, you know, so that was at least some of it, but they couldn't tell whether or not that was him or not. All they knew was that, what was it, a box with a cereal box in it or something?
Yes.
And then some personal possessions from his victims that he would often put in these cereal boxes, cereal killer, and there'd be little, you know, there'd be a BTK on it somewhere.
Right.
And, yeah, but so that's all they knew, was his box ended up here. It had to have been BTK, is what they're thinking, because they got it on camera. But that was part of, you know, what kind of brought him down as well.
Yeah, they still didn't know who he was. They just knew he drove a silver Jeep Cherokee.
A Jeep Cherokee, yeah.
And then it was the floppy disk, you know, at home on his little fucking... 1992 computer, couldn't print a paper, so he uses the one
at the church,
and that's what got him, man, the little floppy disk.
And he kind of, you know, I guess didn't realize that, you know, even then, they can dissect, you know, a floppy disk and find this metadata and, you know, where the location of this ISP and blah, 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 because all that's encrypted in there and shit.
Right.
And I'm not a tech guy, but, I mean, that's pretty, you know, basic. And he didn't understand that. I guess somehow he figured he could just type up some fucking shit at his church there and send it to the cops and they wouldn't be able to figure it out. That did not work. because they were able to figure out where it came from, which was his church, and they knew that the first name of the person who signed in, and that was Dennis. And that was really, I think, the downfall was gaining speed at that point. I mean, he knew at that point, I think, he was fucked. And, you know, eventually, when what, it was in 05, that he ends up, his daughter says that he was, you know, he had left work. I think it was during a lunch break or something, which is what his daughter says. But regardless, he had left work, was very close to the house, not far from getting there. I guess he was going to go eat there or whatever. He was, you know, scoping out, you know, his next victim. Because there hadn't been a murder in quite some time. And so maybe he was, you know, getting the old itchy foot. He needed to move, man, you know, and... but anyway, on his way home, pretty close to his house, boom, he's surrounded. They were able to, you know, bam, they were able to nail him with that floppy disk. That was really his downfall. And it's funny to listen to him with the whole sentencing speech that he gives, which we also checked out a little bit during the break. And that's pretty funny to me. But, you know, I mean, we're sitting and laughing at all this. You know why? Because it's fucking funny. What do you got for us now?
Dude was sick.
Again. Make sure I put my... cigarette down. Take it out of my mouth before I try speaking to the mic. Yeah, this guy was crazy. And again, you know, you can listen to him and just, you know, however much detail, you know, it is. And he's just very nonchalant about it. Like, yeah. You said, it's like he's given a recipe on how to make scrambled eggs. Or, you know, I use the analogy, it's like he's telling you what he did. He woke up and he went and bought a loaf of bread, and he's telling you all the details of that, because that's how nonchalant he kind of was. I mean, it's like, yeah, I did. No correction. You know, and he'll even tell you, you know, oh, I had two guns. Did you have one gun on you? Oh, no, sir. At that time, I had two. Yeah. I mean, just very, like, blah, blah, you know, like it was just whatever.
It also really makes you just wonder, you know, I mean, do you really know your neighbor?
Right. Exactly. I mean, because this guy was just so, you know, highly looked up to in the community. President of the church council, and, you know, he was, you know, dealing with your little Jimmy at the Boy Scouts. And, you know, I mean... that's what makes it difficult, man. That's what makes it scary. You don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows? Otis, your good friend Otis B. Dreads here could be a serial killer. You never know. I just may fucking snap. I don't really see that happening. I'm just saying.
I hope it don't. Like, yeah, I know. Within the next hour or so. Like, no, shit. No.
Yeah, right. I at least got to get this edited and out. Then I'll snap.
I want to at least get out the fucking door
next week. All right,
be doing a show on you.
All right, guys. I hope you all enjoyed it. Again, we'll have, you know, links to Stacy. You be able to watch some of her, you know, cross. Examination. That would be what was it? Stacy
Castro.
Castro. Yeah.
Castro.
I'm
really getting into watching trials, man. I like it.
Yeah, it is interesting, man. It really is to see these guys up on the stands and or just doing, you know, just confessing. Period. I mean, to watch them do it and BTK. Who we will also have the links to. You can watch his confession and also his sentencing. And don't feel bad if you laugh, because Malice and myself had a few gut busters ourselves. But it is interesting, man, to watch them. I mean, and they're just talking about, again, so nonchalantly, you know, either, you know, denying it or just talking about doing it. You know, it's like, kind of, we have both sides of the spectrum, you know, because, you know, Stacey Castor, you know, she was pretty adamant on the fact that her daughter did it.
Right.
You know, and then on the other side of the spectrum, you got BTK, who will very lovingly tell you a story about how he strangled an entire family. And he'll actually make you, you know, he'll tell it to you where you walk away and you don't feel so bad about yourself. It's kind of like, you know, he just tells it in a very friendly way, you know. That was kind of funny. I hope that picked up. That was Malice's new piece of equipment he has here in the Insane Asylum. But, yeah, we'll have links to all that. And, again, another quick shout-out. Here's my Facebook group rundown, Gorehounds of Horror. Misfit Horror Fiend Club, After Dark, Night of the Living Dreads .com. Night of the Living Dreads. No A in Dreads. And, of course, Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis with a K. And check all of those out. You'll find Malice and myself over there as well as this particular shitstorm we called a podcast. You can find them, this podcast, as well as past shitstorms over there at nightoflivingdreads.com. And again, no way. So, with that being said, I am Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice Murphy.
And I think we're going to get the fuck out of here. Let us know what you think in any of the comments below if you are hearing this for the first time, either on nightoflivingdreads.com or over there on Facebook. Let us know. We have comments on both. All right. See ya. Peace.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.